Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group. And every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. And I am Ebony Johnson, and in studio today we have Sharon Lockhart, and we have Beth Wilkinson, and Amy is out studying. Amy, we hope that you're doing well studying your legal laws, books, everything that you're doing. And we have a wonderful special guest in studio with us today, Mara Garcia, who is going to speak with us about dance and storytelling. And we are going to engage in a conversation on celebrating and connecting to our bodies as women. And before we get into that wonderful discussion, we are going to have a bit of news, and then we'll come back and we'll dive in and talk with everyone. Former ABC executive Paul Lee, who found hits like How to Get Away with Murder and led an industry-wide push toward more diverse casting, resigned. Shanning Dungey, previously ABC's drama chief, will take over the primetime part of his job as the head of ABC Entertainment, making her the first black network president. Ms. Dungey's elevation is a breakthrough for an industry that has often struggled with diversity, especially among the senior executive ranks, New York Times reported February 17th. In Tahrir Square, the center of the Egyptian Revolution 5 years ago, women safely joined men to protest for a new future. But that moment soon ended. Hundreds, even thousands of female protesters were sexually assaulted. In some cases, activists believe the government used violence as a political weapon. Mana Al-Marzi, wife of imprisoned Muslim Brotherhood member, expressed, "It was a great victory. We managed to change the way men think because they understood that we are now on the front line with them," PBS reported February 12th. Pulitzer Prize-winning author of To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee, died yesterday at the age of 89. And for our Black History highlight, we like to note Sweet Honey in the Rock, a performance ensemble rooted in African-American history and culture. The ensemble educates, entertains, and empowers its audience and community through a cappella singing and American Sign Language interpretation for the deaf and hearing impaired. Since its 1973 inception in Washington, D.C., founded by Dr. Bernice Johnson Reagan as part of the D.C. Black Repertory Theater Company with Carol Millard, Louise Robinson, and Mai, Sweet Honey in the Rock has continuously evolved into international ambassadors of a cappella vocal and lyrical excellence and musical missionaries of equality, empowerment, and education, peace, love, solidarity, and non-denominational spirituality. Revered most for their live performance, the women have recorded nearly 24 albums and several specifically for children. Thank you, Sweet Honey in the Rock. And we are back. We are going to join with our guests, and I will introduce Mar, and then she will give her a special introduction for herself in her native tongue. Dancer choreographer Mara Garcia collaborates within communities to create stories of identity and place. She is fascinated by stories that have been hidden and the unexpected connections that arise when they are rediscovered. Originally from North Carolina, Mara is an indigenous woman who brings her own mixed-blood Southern story to all of her work. She uses her art to form connections, to uplift indigenous cultural values, and to explore the rhythms of the natural world.
Naole, ani yawia uni yohusa, una do tlasa I de doha, udohi ugalieliga, ge doha kohig, My name is Maura Garcia, and thank you very much for that lovely introduction. And I just reintroduce myself in Cherokee. I'm Cherokee and Matamiskete, a long hair clan, and just gave homage to the indigenous peoples of the Kansas City area, the Kansa, Omaha, Osage, Ponca, Quapaw, and Wichita peoples, and any other people that I may have forgotten in my ignorance. And I'm happy to be here today, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Mark.
That was so beautiful.
It truly was.
Yeah.
I could listen to some more of that if you could interpret as you will.
Well, I'm not fluent, so it might be a spotty interpretation.
Okay.
Yeah, I did too. So, Maura, thanks again. Just thanks so much for coming in and talking with us about dance and the body and connecting. And just you've been performing and have traveled around and listened to a lot. I don't even know how many stories you've listened to, but through your experiences and in your own just personal definitions, what is the body to you?
Yes. So I've been thinking about this question, and it's a, it's not something I actually usually talk about, even though I work with the body. We work with it, and it's the, the tool that I use to express myself, but in terms of what is the body, I think, wow, well, what is the body? And so I just wanted to mention again, you mentioned Sweet Honey and the Rock. It's one of the few groups that as soon as they start singing, I start crying. It's
nice.
That was really nice that you began with them. But I guess the first thing I think about in terms of bodies and stories is that as a dancer, one of the interesting things is that the body is the art form that I use. So yeah. We're both athletes and we are also artists at the same time. Mm. And so there can't be a kind of letting go of the body to finish this work, because the work lives in the body and the body lives in the work. And so you can't have that letting go of yourself, because then you're also letting go of your art form. And so I think I'm very lucky that I happen to be connected to my body for that reason. And so sometimes I almost forget that other people have not been able to do that or yeah. not aware of that. And one of the things I really love when I'm working with non-dancers is that sometimes I'll be teaching a workshop or doing outreach, and I come up with these elaborate choreographic phrases, or I think I need to have something that's so deep. And if someone has been driving all day or sitting in an office all day, or has five kids and they've just been running around and not even been thinking about how their body is moving, the beautiful, simple movements can bring so much peace, so much joy to people. And so, to me, that is something that's special about the body, that without having to talk about it, without having to, come up with some type of essay, you can heal yourself, you can bring joy to others, and you can communicate with one another through the body.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you mentioned like some of the workshops that you do. One of them I noticed on your site, which is MaraGarciaDance.com. If people are interested in taking a look at some of your body of work.
Thank you.
Is it Mariposa Empowerment? Is that how you?
Mariposa
Empowerment. And I was really interested in that particular workshop. You work with trauma survivors, and can you talk a little bit more about that, like teaching people how to, I guess, a part of their healing process, making dance a part of that process?
Yes. I call it Mariposa Empowerment because they are dance-based workshops. It's not therapy. Therapy is a very separate and specific thing. But there are lots of trauma, lives in the body. And pretty much everyone agrees on that. You can talk and have counseling, which is important, have medicines. Those are all important. But if, for example, you're sitting in a position which says, I'm protecting myself because someone's been hurting me, to get out of that position is
just a whole nother level of empowerment. And it's difficult sometimes because lots of times that's not even addressed in those other forms of healing. Mm-hmm. And so some of the work that I do involves, I have one-time workshops. I have workshops that are based on kind of support group format, mm-hmm. but that are using movement. And I have done some of those support groups, some in North Carolina with the Orange County Rape Crisis Center. Mm-hmm. And it was a series of movement-based workshops, which went through different topics, such as boundaries, self-image, but we used movement and dance to address those issues. Mm-hmm. Another, you know, series of workshops that I did here in Kansas City, it was a few years ago, it was in collaboration with MOXA, mm-hmm. the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. There's a piece of choreography I have called Act 3, and it's about the stigma attached to rape survivors. And so I was able to work with a group of really brave women, survivors of child sexual trauma, and teach them this dance, and then we all performed at the University of Missouri, Kansas City Take Back the Night rally.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, so that was wonderful that they allowed us to perform there, and I think just very empowering for everybody, because I struggled with where am I going to present this piece. It's not for, you know, they didn't necessarily want to be on a stage at the Folly Theater, as beautiful as it is. And it was a small piece. It wasn't a full-length piece. And how are we going to present this in a way that would honor them, as well as the format? And the Take Back the Night rally was really a perfect place to do that. So,
when was this?
This was in 2010, I think. So it's been a while. But I hope to collaborate again with the University of Missouri Kansas City Women's Center and the other organizations there. And so... Mm-hmm.
I think the Take Back the Rally event is an annual, maybe happening in about April every year.
It is, I think so, yeah.
So people might keep an eye out for that.
Yes, they should definitely.
Mm-hmm. And when you, like for instance, I've heard some people say this phrase lately, like dance it out, you know, and mm-hmm. when you're just trying to figure out, gosh, what do I do with all of these different emotions or the way that I'm feeling, and if... You know, sometimes we just don't know how best, in a healthy way, I think, to express what it is we really need to say. And so when you use dance to tell a story, mm-hmm. for people maybe like me who, you know, or just really, I mean, the most dances I know is what I pay attention to on TV and different things, but just kind of for myself, if I'm dealing with something, whether it be, you know, a happy feeling or a sad feeling or whatnot, what is your advice on how to just allow myself to just get into my body and let it move?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And, you know, I work best with people in front of me. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, there's some very kind of more obvious general things. Some people could say, you know, put on some music and... They always say, dance like nobody's watching.
Yeah.
And just allow yourself to move without judgment, without judging yourself. And if you don't mind people are there, you know, fine. Let them be there. Also, little children are wonderful for that. Because if you put on some music and you dance with them, and I'm talking about maybe between the ages of 2 and 5 before they start to have strong opinions about certain things.
Yeah.
You know, that is also freeing, and it gives people a little bit of impetus to start dancing because they have to dance with the child to make the child happy, and then they end up making themselves happy.
Yeah.
Singing and dancing.
The vibrations that you get from singing move the insides also.
Yeah.
In a way that that combination of to dance and sing, that's why that's associated with great joy, dancing and singing.
Yeah.
Kids love it.
And actually, our traditional dances, they're dancing and singing. You're praying, dancing, and singing, all of that together.
Yeah.
And you see that all over the world in, you know, indigenous traditions and traditions of all peoples. You're singing and dancing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say put on the music. move like no one is watching you and do it in a non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
I have a question. I have a couple of things. Like when you mentioned body language and people maybe crunching their shoulders forward is what you did and they're protecting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a visual image that I suddenly saw, oh my goodness, she can read bodies.
Mm.
How am I sitting here? How am
I
presenting?
Right.
You know? And I just thought that was interesting about the body language when you mentioned that. And then I have the question about how do you know? Let's say I'm feeling terribly sad. Do I choose happy music? Do I choose sad music? Or what if I'm angry? What kind of music? Fast music, something that I can just use up energy or get out. I don't know. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, like I said, I'm not a therapist or a counselor. So what I would be saying would just be coming from me as Maura and
as a
human being and as a dancer. And that would kind of depend on you. So if I was talking to you, I might spend a little more time figuring out what you like. And when I do classes with people, I do try to look at their eyes and their body and to see, you know, how they're reacting to what I'm mm-hmm. doing and where the resistance is and where I see release. And where I see release, then I keep on going that way.
Mm. Their focus always becomes right to see you and not necessarily to what they're thinking about that's negative.
Mm-hmm. There's I'm going to mess up his name, but he works for Headlong Dance Theater out of Philadelphia, and he gave me some advice. He said, go where the heat is. He said, it's not always where you expect it is. So that was actually talking about the field of dance as a business, but I also would say that, you know, for yourself, if you put on, some people love sad music that really makes them get into the mood of what and get rid of it. Some people hate it. So if you find that after you've listened to that sad music and moved around slowly, you feel, oh, wow. And then that's what you should do.
That's better.
You know? But if you want drum and bass, and then that's what you should put on. So
Yeah. That's good. And so do you, just personally, a quick personal question, do you dance every day? Is it just,
I dance every day. I don't necessarily rehearse every day.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a rehearsal schedule that a pretty set rehearsal schedule, and then I also cross train. So,
What do you mean cross train?
Sorry, so I cross train in things that may not necessarily be dance technique, but are movement based. That's basically to train oneself to be able to dance. So it might be Pilates or weightlifting or, you know, dynamic weightlifting or plyo,
types
of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It does seem like, just as you mentioned too, with the, if we're sitting at a desk every, you know, for a long period of time, at, you know, for a day, throughout the day rather, just the importance of remembering like the body is meant to move.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like I saw a small piece on your site. It was a tribute to water. Let the water flow. Or I'm sorry. Going to water. Yes. And I really enjoy. Could you share a little bit like on that? The write-up, you kind of talked about water and how it naturally seeks and finds its own rhythm. Can you share a little bit about that with the audience?
Yes. And I'd first also like to say about your movement idea. Just talking about movement in the body, we as humans are meant to be moving all day long, to be walking, to be outside, and to be in different positions, getting up, getting down, sitting on the ground, moving around. And so the everyday movement, aside from if you're going to go and, you know, run for an hour, just the everyday movement is so important. I worry sometimes we forget that. And so I even think setting a little alarm for yourself so that you move every 40 minutes. If you find, even myself, when I'm writing a grant, after a while, I think, why am I hurting? And it's because I've been sitting with my shoulders hunched over the computer trying to get this done. And, you know, sometimes I kind of have to, you know, slap myself and say, get up.
Yeah.
You know? So don't slap yourself, but do
right.
And the piece that you're talking about, Going to Water, it refers to one of our Cherokee I will say ceremony or prayer ways, I could put it that way, of praying and actually going to the riverside to pray. Mm-hmm. And so that's what that, the piece is about, coming to the water, getting in the water, and how one feels after leaving that water. Mm-hmm. And so, but I am fascinated by water. It's such a flowy and sometimes seemingly small thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're at Niagara Falls, obviously it's not small, it's huge.
Yeah.
But it trickles and it goes, and if you sit there and watch that river or a creek, there'll be a rock and maybe it'll stop and then it'll trickle around the rock and find some other way to go, and it'll go over and it'll go under, and eventually if enough water goes, the rock will be moved.
Yeah.
The rock will be moved out of the way. And I'm always fascinated by the way it changes the course of land, the way it changes course itself, and it finds a way to keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
It does not stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely makes me just think about how fluid I would like to be in my own body, and allow myself to just feel all of my feelings and know that I'll survive it, whatever it is, not just cherry picking the ones. Oh, I like this feeling. I don't like those other ones, you know, so much. But which is something that I enjoy about just even the concept of your work, of using dance and our bodies to tell our own stories.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, when I think about the water and everything like that, I'm thinking environmental, just the whole surroundings and everything. And it's just like focusing just on that minute little part is like, it's kind of like focus, and a really good part that I have been just kind of out. I mean, I ride, I bikes, and I play with, I'm along the river, and I play with animals and things like that, but just focusing on one part for a certain period of time is like a routine. That's such a great idea.
Mm. Oh.
I mean, well, it's been tradition for centuries, but for myself to take that time to really focus is just like, wow, I never really thought about it as something to take a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I learned it from cats.
Nice.
You know, they sit and they look at something and you think, what in the world could they be looking at? Then if you start and watch what they're watching, you realize the minute and small things are fascinating, and you could sit there and watch what they're watching for as long as they do, you know.
Yeah. Now, Amar, as a woman of color, what role has dance played in your life in helping you tell your own story?
I also, you had such good questions. I was looking at your questions. So I really have no memory of not dancing. I was very fortunate to have parents that were able to take me to a dance class. I've seen dance and all types of settings, from ceremony to on stage. I was able to see professional on stage dance growing up in near American Dance Festival in North Carolina. And so I have been, I never like to use the word spoiled, but in terms of the exposure I've had to all different types of dance from around the world, and, you know, dance from three-year-olds to the Bolshoi, to people, you know, hundreds of people dancing in ceremony, to all of these things, I've been very lucky. So I don't know a time when I haven't had dance around me. That hasn't been, and I'm very grateful for that. And in terms of, I guess it has allowed me, because I decided a long time ago that I didn't need to be in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps if I had thought, okay, I'm going to only perform, you know, classical ballet, which is beautiful and good, and I respect deeply. I might have had some thoughts or issues about being, you know, a brown woman in that box of classical ballet. But because I decided to get out of the boxes and just make my own work, and from my own experience, in some ways, it has been what is unique about my work, and I don't feel I guess I'm lucky. I don't feel as much.
You don't feel boxed in.
Yeah, I don't feel boxed in because I got out of the box and said, I don't want your box, and thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you're more of a giver and giving to others than a taker, and a lot of times when you see the focused kind of creations that they do in the classic sense, you feel like they're just taking kind of, you're trying to figure out what the story is, or the dances, or the music is, that all kind of gets put together. Mm-hmm. And so this seems to be more of a giving the focus, and kind of like making it not complicated like sometimes when you're seeing the performing theater can be.
Yes, it's one of the problems that we have in dance, and contemporary dance and modern dance, that I think a lot of people feel intimidated, or that they have to have, you know, gotten an MFA to be able to watch it and comment on it, or, you know, I even had friends and family who will not come to performances, or who are just, you know, intimidated to engage because that's something weird and strange that they don't understand. And I completely understand that. That's the society that we've built around us, and the relationship that we have with performing arts at this point. That's not to say it can't change, and hopefully it will. And so, I want people to be able to understand. I know that they won't be able to understand everything, but I will say, I don't know if you all are familiar with Liz Lehrman and Liz Lehrman Dance Exchange. She's based in Tacoma Park, or was. I think she may be at a university now. But she has a book that she's written, and many writings that she has about dance philosophy. And she said there's different levels that you relate to a performance on. And she said once she was up in a, and I may be misquoting her, so if anyone's listening, forgive me, but this is what I remember, that she was in a building and she looked out of the window and she saw some children flopping around, and they were doing, and she looked at that and thought, that is an amazing movement. And she was, you know, that a movement attracted her and wanted to make her look. So that was on one level. So she walked out of the building and she came down and saw what they were doing, and the children, they had, there was some fish that had fallen out of a pond, and they were flopping around, and the children were imitating the fish. And so she understood level two, and so that made it even more interesting. And then she started remembering when she used to go fishing with her father, and when something similar would happen. Mm. And she, you know, it brought tears to her eyes, this memory. And so she was engaged on these three levels. And when you have a, that's great performance if you can get those three levels. But I also believe that if you have one of those, that's just can be also rewarding. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I hope for. I hope for with my work, even if they can't get, because my work sometimes has very specific imagery that's Southeast Native based, that some people have no clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. I hope that at least they get two of those. Mm-hmm. And also you mentioned about just dance in general. Do you have to go to break? No. I guess my thought is that dance is huge. It's not just, you know, perhaps competition dance, or it's not only Broadway. It's not only tap dance. There are so many forms of movement that there's so much room for a diversity of movement and just different expressions. And so that, I think we all have to remember that it's not a small field. It's such a large and beautiful field, and so there's something for everybody within that field.
Mm-hmm. I've kind of been holding this question.
Okay.
When she mentioned trauma, body trauma, in the last 2 years I've had five major surgeries, most recently two knee replacements, and that's anesthetic, four times under general anesthesia. The last time was a spinal block, which was kind of pleasant, except I woke up and heard the hammering going on. But talking about trauma, I can relate to that. And, you know, it's been, oh gosh, almost 6 months since my last knee replacement, and I'm beginning to kind of feel like I'm going to be out of this traumatic, ongoing, continual pain. And I don't know why I say that, except that perhaps I need to try to figure out if I can dance again, or
would it be dancing with your any part of your body? Would it be something with bodies that? Yeah,
yeah, You're dancing right
you
now.
Look wonderful.
For those of you listening, Sharon's moving her arms in the studio.
Easier than moving the knees.
You look like an angel flying, honey.
Yes. I'm so glad you mentioned that, actually, because when we were just talking about trauma, we were talking... I was more specifically at that moment thinking about sexual trauma, trauma of abuse, and how that affects the body. But then there's the whole other trauma of physical trauma, which has, you know, mental and spiritual and emotional stuff that it leads on the body, as well as changing and the way the body, you know, moves and the way you feel about how you look and the way that what you're able to do and how you're able to do things. And so some of them, yes, you are already dancing, and I think you should continue dancing. Mm-hmm. But some of the most outstanding performances, I saw once Victoria Marks. She's a choreographer. I believe she's in San Francisco. She had some beautiful choreography, some of which was very physical, dancers leaping. Then she did a whole dance. She was sitting on the floor, and it was with her hands and arms and fingers, and I was captivated. Mm-hmm. It was captivating because of her control, and not in a scary control freak way, but a good way, her control and ability to of expression and ability to let that power flow through what was actually moving was just as captivating and wowing as, you know, her dancers, which were leaping, you know, 6 feet off the floor. And that also reminds me of another piece by an older woman dancer who had danced all her life. She had some hip issues. Mm-hmm. She confided to me once that she, you know, she had a very kind of bouncy walk. And she said, "I walk like that because my hips hurt." So, but one would never know. Yeah. You know, she had she came into the room and it was always very dramatic. But that's because her hips hurt. But she did a dance with a suitcase and a chair, and it was all about getting up and leaving. It's that song, "Everyone Get On Board." Mm-hmm. I can't remember that. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best pieces in the whole evening, the showcase that I saw. So, I hope you remember those things.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Well, with that, thank you so much for joining us today. And one of the pieces that I'll just take with me is just kind of the move with no judgment. Mm-hmm. And just to
be kind to yourself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, to be kind to myself and, you know, and go where the heat is. So mm-hmm. wherever, whatever's going on with whatever mm-hmm. emotion in my body for me as a woman to connect to let it, you know, let it be and let it flow. So thanks so much for joining us, Mara. And can you, your website, can you spell that out for people if they're interested in finding more about you?
It's www.moragarciadance.com, and that's MauraGarciaDance.com. So MauraGarciaDance.com.
Thank you so much. And we are going to take a break and we will be back. And we're back. And I would like to just share an event that I have coming up that I'm co-facilitating. And it is just about, with all that's going on, what's really going on. And it's just been, there's been a lot of, you know, if you will, upheaval and a lot of different conversations, some anger and hurt and some joy and some, you know, scary things of what will the future hold and what does that mean for each of us. And I'm coming together with some people from my church at Unity Southeast, and we are going to just host a conversation for people to come in and just join in and create it themselves and really explore the possibility that perhaps we're birthing a nation. And even as our conversation before with movement and just letting it go where it can take you, that we are possibly in a great, new, interesting, exciting time where we're kind of rewriting the story or reimagining ourselves, if you will. And so I just like to invite everyone to come out, and you can co-create and participate and share your thoughts and experiences or ideas and concerns. That's coming up this Friday, February 26th, and it's for 1 hour from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., and that's at Unity Southeast Church. It's on 3421 East Meyer Boulevard, which is just two blocks west of the main entrance to Swole Park. So if you'd like to come and participate in the discussion, it's not a lecture. It's totally open, and we can talk about some of the changes that we have going on with ourselves personally, our families, and across the world, and what kind of piece together what all this may mean for us, and hopefully in an exciting new way, reimagine ourselves, if you will. Sharon, I don't know if you remember last show of the year, we were talking about the best and worst, and you know, and kind of what were our highlights and lowlights. And one gentleman called in and he said, America needs to be reborn again, you know, like, yes. That you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And a part of this conversation is really inspired from that as well. Like, what happens when we kind of return to childhood in a way and reimagine ourselves. So, again, feel free to come out and join us this Friday, February 26th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. It's a community conversation, and our goal is for it to be dynamic as we just dive in and discuss. And that's at Unity Southeast Church. It's 3421 East Meyer Boulevard, and that's just two blocks west of the main entrance to Swole Park, which is where it's facing the Southeast High School.
Okay, so it would be then on the south side of the street, your church. I say that because I'm visually impaired and trying to get a handle.
I believe so, Sharon. I'm so not good with... Okay, so on the south...
Yeah, I gotcha.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And it's a white... Yes, it's white. Okay. So, and it's actually another church sitting right next to it. But we're facing Southeast High School and just two blocks west of that main open way for Swope Park. So that's what...
Well, speaking of rebirthing ourselves, every year there's a man who does a channeling of, in fact, a Huron Indian, and he is telling us about what we can expect coming forward. And I just attended that at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Okay. I think it was, around the 20th of January. And he also said, we're living in very interesting times, and there is change coming. Mm-hmm. And so it's very interesting. You've heard about, is it the 100th monkey or the 100th squirrel? By the time the 100th monkey learns to do it, then everybody can do it. It's like consciousness is, it's out there and it's spreading. Even though we may not be thinking we're connected, somehow there's a greater source that may be connecting us together.
All of us. Mm-hmm.
And that this consciousness is flowing between us. Mm-hmm. If we can just keep a more peace consciousness, world peace consciousness. And I know many people do that.
And Sharon, we have someone calling in here pretty soon. And this is the line now. I know Beth is going to introduce. Beth, you want to?
Mary Mosley, she's a women's rights activist, advocate, and she's been working since joining the National Organization of Women in the early 1970s. She lobbies for the Missouri Now organization, and she is associate professor in Spanish at William Woods University in Fulton, Missouri, and organizing of the symposium Equality Matters, and their conversations in gender and race. It's 5 days of speakers, panels, and performers, and it will end on the last day will be a play on Friday evening.
Whoops, sounds...
Are you there? Let's see.
It sounds like we're not connected.
Are you there? Give us 1 second.
Yeah, is she going to call back?
Let me see. I think she's still on there. We're having a little bit of difficulty one moment.
Well, I will go on and talk about Mary. She and I just traveled to Cuba together with William Woods College and had a really good time, and it was nice to have a Spanish professor along.
Oh, truly.
Although Cuban Spanish is a little bit different than typical Spanish, and but she did pretty well. People were amazed by it. I've known her since I became a feminist in 1991, I think. I went to a consciousness-raising group in Jefferson City, Missouri, and met several women that I'm still friends with that have inspired me and mentored me and helped me remain strong in my radical feminism.
All right.
And Mary is definitely one of those people. She's had so many varied experiences.
Right.
She once burned high heel shoes in the burning of the bra sort of thing that never happened. She actually burned high heels in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, truly.
And she's been a member of NOW in several states and on the board of the National Organization for Women. And was Mary on one of those lines? Why can't we get her on the line?
We're having a bit of a tough time. One, let's see, I'm going to try again. Let's
okay. How much more can I talk about Mary? Mara?
Well, I was wondering if you could tell us more about the symposium, or is she going to talk about that?
She was going to talk about the symposium. She's worked very hard.
Let me see if I hear.
Okay.
Mary, are you there?
Mary?
Okay.
Is everything turned on?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, I can. This is something I wanted to bring up while we were talking about the dance. And this is, I spent in the summer, I was at the women's media camp up in Canada at Newman Island. And there was like just kind of a small island, and we were working together to kind of learn communication and broadcasting. This is something that we was a just beautiful surprise. We were there. There were native Canadians from different areas of Canada that have been there from before the Caucasians were there. And so it was beautiful. We kind of went on a walk, and we were just going towards the exhibit of these were tributes to the women who had been killed and disappeared. And this was in the tribes that were up there. And it was just this beautiful exhibit. We looked through it and thought we're just in awe of it, and it was like what Caucasian one that's not tribal would just call moccasins, part of the moccasins, and but there was just hundreds of them. We went out after the exhibit, and we went out, and there were women almost up from the building, the museum, and they were still. And then they were singing. They started singing, and they danced. And these were natives, and it was just the most beautiful, inspiring time that we shared with them. And so it was just, I was thinking of just what people worked with, or you worked with people, and people worked with you on what you present to them.
Yes, that sounds beautiful.
But you can see the photos that I have of the exhibit and the movement around them.
I've had the opportunity to work some in Canada, and what Aboriginal peoples are doing up there is really just beautiful, powerful, inspiring, and I hope that things will continue to grow in that way. It's just
wonderful. And that's something in the terms I need to be a little more working with.
Well, one can get lost in terms. People, you know, everyone will say, always just ask people. With Canada is different than the U.S., and
right.
Terms and things that we say here, they do not say there, so.
Right.
I think Mary, are you there?
Hello.
Yes. Hey. Thanks for being patient with us. Thank you so much. Thanks for being patient with us.
And thanks to Beth for being able to share some experiences she had with sisterhood. Great. Okay, Mary, hey, we've already introduced you as a fabulous feminist.
Well, thank you.
And you have been planning for some time a symposium that we want you to tell us about that's going to be held coming up shortly.
Right. It's going to be February 29th to March 4th, and it's in Fulton. And it's called Equality Matters, Conversations on Gender and Race. And our intention was to discuss the intersection of gender and race. And we have some programs that just deal with one or the other, but basically we're trying to show how gender and race discrimination have worked together to thwart the American dream of equality. So we have activities every day that week. Sometimes there's two or three.
And your keynote speaker, tell us about her.
Yeah, the keynote speaker is going to be Tuesday, March 1st at 7 o'clock on campus in Delaney Auditorium on the William West campus in Fulton. And her name is Danielle McGuire. And her talk will center on the intersection of racism and sexism. And it's called To Gain Title to Our Bodies, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement.
You're not going to believe how timely this is with our guest today. It's serendipity beyond unbelievable.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Our guest today is Mara Garcia, who is a Cherokee Indian, and she's a dance choreography. Yeah, and she does workshops. Yeah, amazing.
Oh, that's great.
But I interrupted your train of thought there because I was just so dumbfounded by the connection.
Well, Danielle McGuire, as I said, is a keynote speaker, and she's written a book called At the Dark End of the Street. And it's about the women who actually started meeting before the civil rights movement really became well-known in the media. Women started meeting to decide what to do about the black men who were raping them and getting away with it because they didn't have much power. The women didn't have much power, and so they decided to start meeting and try to figure out some ways to stop this business of the white men raping black women with impunity. And so that's what that talk is about her research. And that should be excellent. And then the next morning, she's from Wayne State University, history professor. And the next morning, she'll meet with interested students or anybody who wants to just talk to her informally on campus before she has to leave. And on Monday, the 29th, we're showing The Hunting Ground. I don't know if anybody's heard about that before, but that's a movie about Title IX violations on campuses, about sexual assault on campus, and how badly some of the campuses have handled it. And so we're going to be showing that, and then we'll be discussing it with someone from the Missouri Coalition Against Rape and Domestic Violence. So that's Monday. Oh, I forgot. We also have a woman who's one of our professors who's writing a novel. You can call Girls Don't Count. And it's a very interesting novel about how women need to have title to their own bodies. And so that works in well with the same theme as the keynoter.
And our guest today.
We have a speaker on Wednesday. We have a speaker on sports, civil rights, race, and sports. And that's a lunchtime thing. And then in the afternoon, we have an interactive theater piece called Difficult Dialogues. And it's some people from Columbia who put together this theater troupe, and they act out certain things that have happened to people, maybe as far as racism or sexism is concerned, and then the audience discusses it and discusses how they would they would react. And then we have a musical performance that evening. Theo Peoples from St. Louis is coming, and he was a singer with the Four Tops and a Grammy Award winner. Well, so that back. Should be interesting.
You're about to convince me I need to take the week off work and be down there, Mary.
So.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this. Are any of these going to be recorded that we might be able to air them?
Oh, wow. You know what? I haven't got that far yet. We've been working on this for a year, by the way.
Yeah.
And we've had a committee that's been working for about a year to develop this whole week of events. And so, but, you know, we hadn't even talked about that. So we'd have to get the permission of the people. But that's a wonderful idea. On Thursday, we have three events. We have a panel, and I'll be part of that panel. Steve Calloway from the Minority Men's Association in Columbia and a Spanish teacher, a Latina woman, and me representing the National Organization for Women. And the panel is called Stories Along the Way, and it's going to be a discussion of what has changed in our lifetimes. And then we have an opening of our art exhibit, which is called also Equality Matters, and it's a juried exhibition. So that should be interesting. We have quite a few entries so far, so I'll be interested to see the ones that get into the show. I earned my quilt, I have to say it. And then we have
an artist enter their pieces
It's too late because the jury had to have time to get them juried, and so Monday was the last day.
But this is a yearly matter or event?
We hope so.
Okay.
This is the plan, yes.
Okay.
It's going to be yearly.
Well, I don't think my stone pieces are going to go too far.
Anyway, we have a speaker on Lessons from Ferguson, and that will be Amy Hunter from the YWCA in St. Louis.
And that's on Thursday night.
That's on Thursday night. And that sounds like it's going to be really good. And then on Friday night, we're having a Reader's Theater play, and it's called In His Service.
It's called what?
In His Service.
In His Service?
Yes, In His Service. And there was a... So here's the genesis of this play. There was a slave in Callaway County whose master raped her continuously, and she finally decided she'd had enough, and so she killed him, burned him up in her fireplace. And so sometime in the 90s, a historian uncovered this story and wrote a book about it. And so the woman who wrote this play, which is a fictionalized account of the trial, lived in the house that lawyer's family had lived in. And she got really, really interested in the story of the slave woman who killed her master and wrote this play. And so we're going to have that on Friday night, and then there'll be a reception for the playwright.
We're going to start our theme music very low and play over it while you wrap up.
Okay, well, that's basically all we're doing. But once again, I just want to talk about the keynote speaker, who's Danielle McGuire. She's a historian from Wayne State University, and I think her speech will be really, really good. It's called To Gain Title to Our Bodies, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement.
And you did say there is a story. What happened to her? Was she convicted or did she go free?
Oh, the slave woman that killed her master, she was convicted and hanged.
Oh, dear. What? Okay.
But here's the thing. She had a trial, you know? She wasn't just lynched from a tree.
Okay, so that
she
was
had a trial.
Kind of notable then for the time.
And that was notable, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you, Mary, for all the work you do. And, you know, I'm just going to have to get down there somehow for more of it than I had thought. Thanks so much.
Oh, I hope a lot of people will come. It's going to be really great.
Thank you.
Oh, your contact info for the event. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's on the website, williamwoods.edu.
Williamwoods.edu. Oh, my okay. gosh. Thanks to Mara for thinking of that.
Yeah, it's on the website. It's on Facebook.
Okay. I wonder if you type in Equality Matters, something might even pop up. But thank you. Williamwoods.edu.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Let me do it.
Okay. Williamwoods.edu.
At Williamwoods.edu. It's, it's under the events.
Okay.
Or under events or news or both, actually.
Okay. So. Thank you so much. This sounds like
thank
a
you.
Wonderful, wonderful symposium.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Thank you.